Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud today. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My power turned up. Stop it right now. I'll be done. I'll play my fight.
Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, here I am in New York. It looks like an absolutely gorgeous day outside. I guess I can turn off the air conditioner. I see a breeze. Okay, that's okay. Yeah, it's nice and sunny, and today is going to be an interesting show, especially for downtown Abbey fans. I'm sorry, downtown Abbey fans. I keep thinking the word is downtown all the time. Because we're going to have Alistair is going to talk to us about the history of Alistair Bruce, by the way, is going to talk to us about the history, not necessarily of the show, but as we were watching the show, all this history was going on, and we have the Downton Abbey exhibit here in New York going until, I believe it's September 3rd. I don't know where it's going to tour afterwards. And probably you could see a lot of it when you're there, if you could stop at everything and read it all. This is what I want to concentrate on what was going on during Downton Abbey episodes in terms of wars or what was, things like that, or women's rights and, things like that. Anyway, so I'm waiting for Alistair Bruce to call in. In the meantime, I guess let's, where's my favorite? Okay. Wait a minute. Yeah. No, you can't talk. I mean, you could talk. All right, okay. Well, the rubber chickens are here. I'm going to be taking them out later this afternoon to go out to eat. Okay, well, I think we have Alistair. Are you here?
Hello there. Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
All the way from the United Kingdom.
Oh, good. First, do me a favor, introduce yourself. Go ahead and brag.
I'm Alistair Bruce, and I'm the historical advisor for Downton Abbey, and therefore I've been involved in the project since its inception, working with Julian Fellowes, the writer, and with all the production team.
And you have another thing that needs to be told about you also? What you do?
Well, there are quite a few. I'm very lucky. I'm a part-time soldier in the British Reserve Army, I'm one of the Queen's heralds in that I carry the appointment of FitzAlan, Pursuivant of Arms, Extraordinary, and lead all royal processions. And I'm also the national event and constitutional commentator for Sky News, and I'm the contributor on royal matters for ABC News.
Aha. So when you hear that voice and you'll see the face, you'll know who it is when you're on ABC News. Okay. All right, what I want to talk about is, yes, I've watched the whole series. I got very hooked on it, but I got to tell you why. What interested me most about the series is that every time you'd watch an episode, it was like you're watching a movie, not a soap opera. You know what I mean? It was the form it took was if you were watching a movie. So it wasn't that like the camera moving little bits and, you know, kind of thing that made it look like, oh, I'm watching TV. So that's
what
did
it. They had a wonderful process, actually. They used the still and steady cameras always on tripods for above stairs where the aristocracy and the family themselves lived, and then below stairs where all the hard-working working-class servants were. They always used cameras on their shoulder, which sort of gave a sense of activity and moving. But I think it was very filmic, because the lucky thing about this rich story of how great social change took place in Britain at the beginning of the 20th century is that when Julian starts to lift colour from this time and place it on the canvas of the Downton Abbey story, it is so wonderfully colourful, because England at that time and the way people lived, particularly above stairs, was hugely interesting and formed the living version of a history that had been evolving really for 1,000 years.
Hmm. So when it starts, and I, you know, because I haven't seen it in a while, was that right before World War One? Is that what we're looking at?
The series begins in 1912, when the heir to the earldom, and of course in Britain we have these titles and they're like sort of little kingdoms, but in this case Lord Grantham is an earl, and his heir is killed in the sinking of the Titanic in April 1912. So you're sort of impacted at the beginning with that fact and realizing that even though he's got three daughters, the strange nature of how these things are inherited in England is that women cannot inherit. So this distant cousin's death, the male, is a cataclysmic moment for the estate, which is a large amount of land and a big house. And, you know, all of this is shown and why it's important in the exhibition that is on in New York at the moment and up until September the 3rd. It's about to end, which is really sad. So I went there twice to see the exhibition, and people who might be interested ought to go pretty fast because time's running out.
Oh, yeah. So that's what I want to kind of get into in terms of if you're watching it, like, see, when I went to the exhibit, there was so much to see that I didn't really concentrate on reading everything, because there were certain parts where you could get, like, what kind of history was going on at the time. So this is kind of the things that I wanted to kind of mention. Like, there was a whole thing about women's rights, I believe, and how that focused
well,
with the...
Well, it was a huge period of time. Of change, and I always take the view that we're still going through the massive liberal revolution that started with the French Revolution in 1789, and part of that process was the early realization of the rights of women to vote, and it was sort of almost a surprise, I think, to some people that women hadn't the right to vote until exactly 100 years ago this year. And we witnessed that process and the enabling of that early release of influence and power that came to women. And it's all part of this gradual change from the old aristocratic way to the much more liberal and free times that we know now. I mean, when you were born in the early 20th century in England, you were born to a class and a place in society, and you sort of knew your place. And that's all gone now, except there are elements of difference that still exist. But everyone is essentially equal, with equal rights, equal opportunities. You can argue about whether the liberal revolution has completed its course, and I would say it hasn't yet. Still change going on. But Downton Abbey brings this to life by looking at a family and looking at the people who were working in this small community with them.
Yeah. So at this point, like, what particular, eras or whatever did we go through watching Downton Abbey? What historical events did we actually watch?
The first massive realization is that there is this movement of change going on, in that the Lords, who used to have considerable power, had in 1910 much of that taken away with a thing called the People's Budget. So for the first time, people who owned the land were facing higher degrees of taxation, and gradually, with socialism growing, there was a revision of what was a fair working wage. And both those two were compressing the wealth of the aristocrats who lived in these big houses. Then we see the Great War, in which America, with us, took part in fighting against Germany and Austria. And it was such a horrific war that lasted 4 years for the British that it ground down the national preparedness to keep the old order after that war. And so further change takes place. And yes, you were mentioning the movement for social change for women, the fact that people were starting to marry between classes, so an aristocrat we see marrying a chauffeur, and so it goes on. So I think those are the main elements of change that we witness.
And in terms of the history, and I forgot, like, when it ends, where are we? Like, what year or whatever are we kind of in?
1924 is where we reach in the series, yeah. So in a way, it's 12 years of change from 1912 to 1924 over a 6 series.
Okay, because it's also interesting that, is it just the, I've lived in New York City all my life, so is it just in the U.K., that you would have the homes where you'd have an upstairs downstairs situation?
Well, of course, in Rhode Island, you've got the cottages of the immensely wealthy American families who had, on the whole, come over with very little and had created enormous wealth. And one of the ways they sought to display it was by taking the European template of wealth, which was generally aristocratic, and actually reproducing it with far more grandeur because the wealth was there to do it. And if you go and see Breakers, not far from New York, up
in
Rhode Island.
Oh, in Newport, you mean?
Yes, exactly. You see the most amazing building, still pretty much left, because when the family ceased to live like that, they just walked away from it, and there it is, unchanged. But what's fascinating about British aristocratic houses is the family have relentlessly gone on and on living in the house and had to do with less and less support. And now you're likely to see Lady This or Lady That doing all the cleaning herself and desperately trying to put the flowers in the vase before the guests come.
Oh, that's interesting. By the way, I assume you must have had a lot of fun working with the series, huh?
I absolutely loved working on Downton Abbey. I don't think any of us realized when it began that it would capture so much interest. And it has been a phenomenon, really, because, you know, when we first waited to hear the viewing figures in England, this is before it had gone out to the United States, we were absolutely staggered at how many people had tuned in. And then with the second episode, up it went. And this growth just rolled. And it's always a privilege if you're working in an industry like I do, making programs, particularly ones that reflect history, when people engage with them, find something that echoes for them and that it's a success in that way.
Yeah. Well, are you sad that it's all over?
Well, in a sense, it ran its course, and there are always possibilities for other things to spring up. But, you know, if you're looking for that period also is over. But the magnificent thing about the exhibition in New York City is that you can go to Downton Abbey, walk into the kitchen, walk into the dining room, see the clothes,
right. Hear
the stories. I'm afraid there's quite a lot of recorded descriptions by me, if you listen carefully enough, on all the interactive things that people can do. So very often when you watch a television show, you feel such identity with the place and the people, you want to go and connect with it. And when it all ends, you feel slightly at a loss. Well, the lovely thing about Downton Abbey and this exhibition is you can actually carry on and make the experience your own.
Oh, well, that's true. There's one of the things, I guess, it's where you apply for a job.
Yes, that's rather fun. I worked out that I'd have been absolutely hopeless as a chauffeur because I'm engineering hopeless. But it does ask you all the questions that it might have come up at an interview, and you are then told what job you'd get at Downton Abbey. It's quite interesting and very revealing.
So in other words, when you're seeing this exhibition, you're seeing, like, more than one. In other words, you're seeing a lifestyle, that and just Downton Abbey is an example. Is that the...
Well, I think that the aristocratic lifestyle that was redolent at the time that Downton Abbey is set has effectively gone from the United Kingdom. People do not live like that. I mean, there are echoes of it around the life of the Queen and the delivery of her performance as head of state. But on the whole, people don't have a large number of servants because they can't afford it. And, you know, if you look at this period and time, there was a great deal of grandeur about it. But you do get a sense through the series that it wasn't just something that if you had wealth you could indulge in and just do what you like. You were still constrained by moral requirements that were set by religion, that were set by an expectation that if you lived at the top of society, you were expected to live in a certain way. And, you know, you get a sense of how much had to be hidden. They also look at the fact that homosexuality was illegal. And, you know, the difficulty of one of the characters to deal with that in their lives at a time when the likelihood was prison. So, you know, again, you know, much of this seems extraordinarily out of touch with today, but these were very real issues only 100 years ago.
Yeah. And I remember something was also like anti-Semitism. There was something about that something came up, right?
Well, I think that in the show, we tried to reflect all the elements that were going on in society at the time.
Right.
And what Julian did when he was writing it was he took events that had actually happened, not fortunately to one single family, but he brought all those events as examples to show roughly a spectrum of what life was like at that time.
Yeah, that's... It certainly got people to say, oh, I can't wait until the next episode. You have no... on my Facebook page, I would watch everybody going, oh, I can't wait till the next episode. I can't, you know. It was interesting. Actually, that's what started me. One of my friends was watching it, and she said, have you seen it? I said, nah, that's not my style. And I watched it one day, and I went, ooh, this is really good. And the next one. So,
a lot of my friends over here who know that I was working on it used to say, oh, it's not my sort of thing. I don't watch Downton Abbey. And I said to them, one day you will have flu. And the truth is, all of us, we sometimes get ill and we have to go to bed for a few days. And there's nothing like Downton Abbey to get you through and well again, because there's plenty of it there.
Actually, it's funny you say that, because sometimes I, with all the TV available, I could be looking at it and going, there's nothing on. And then I would actually go, oh, wait a minute, there's a rerun of Downton Abbey. I'm going to watch that. You know, just to get away from the...
Julian the writer. Yeah, Julian the writer is very good at creating layered characters. And what works is that there's quite a big cast. There's always a storyline that each of them can engage with and is relevant for the overall story of each character. And he's just such a magically good writer that he can bring you into all of that and let you feel great warmth and affection for characters and huge loathing for others. And very often I found, because I did a lot of tours of the United States while Downton Abbey series were being aired there, and often people would ask about the actor who played, say, Thomas, who is a rather dastardly and difficult and unlike character. And they'd say, oh, he must be awful. And he's the nicest man on earth. He's just a very good character. And all these people have become really good friends of mine. And I keep in touch with them now because, you know, it was a very strong team that Downton Abbey won. And it went on for 6 years. And honestly, you know, you can go to prison for less time for doing some terrible things. So I did get to know them all terribly well.
Was it 6 years, huh? That this... Wow.
6 years of filming for 6.5 months each year.
Of filming, yeah.
That's a long time to be together with people.
So,
and I spent all my time telling the actors how to do this, how to do that. And I think they must have found me rather aggravating, actually, making them sit up straight at the dining room table, making them, one actor, Hugh Bonneville, who plays Lord Grantham, put his hands in his pockets once. And I told him on their account, would somebody of his social station put their hand in their pocket? And he once saw me with my hand in my pocket, and he came up and said the same thing a couple of years later. So, you know, we did have tremendous banter, but it's this small thing. It's like telling the footman to always stand with their heels touching close together so that they don't stand with their legs apart, which never looks good. All these small details to make the experience subconsciously entertaining just as much as your conscious is excited by the narrative.
So what you did is, prior to the show, you really studied the total history of that whole, of the period of time that we see from the beginning to end, to make sure that everything was correct.
Yes, and talking about form and how people would behave, and, for instance, they wouldn't cut across a conversation with someone, which I'm continually doing to you, madam, and I do apologize. It's just that we are the other side of the Atlantic, and I am afraid I start answering long before my time. I do apologize. But it's all that element of courtesy and politeness that very much was the mark of Downton Abbey, and trying to make sure that the actors knew confidently what was the normal behavior of someone in their social position so that they could bring it to life as actors always do.
Yeah, okay. So... As far as the ABC News, so you're the person reporting on things that are going on in the UK. Our correspondent, so to speak.
I had great fun covering the royal wedding with the ABC News team, and I am something of an expert on the way Britain and the nation celebrates events, the way the royal ceremonial and pageantry works. And so I try to bring that to life for people who are watching, because it's not just a display for no reason. Everything that is done ceremonially in Britain has a provenance and a reason. And when you unwrap it, it just becomes hugely exciting, because you realize that you're part of this great national story. And when everything has meaning, it just sparkles into life with an extra relish and luster that you can always bring into television if you commentate in a sensible and exciting way.
Well, I'll definitely watch for you on TV now. That was the guy on my radio show, right. But I'm going to be going back to the exhibition, by the way.
Oh, madam, I'd love to meet you there, but sadly it's a bit far for me. But it is two occasions I went, and on both I found things that I had no idea the team putting the exhibition together had found and included. And, you know, it's got a spectrum. You can walk around it, as you explained, and just experience what you visually see, standing in some of the actual sets, feeling that you're in the places where all this filming happened. And you can take as many photographs as you like, which is not always the case at these things. And then the second time you go back, you can really delve into the detail, some of the stuff that I got excited about helping the exhibition prepare. And if you want, challenge me and do my job next time.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to going back. I appreciate your calling in, because I want to get people to the last minute to, you know, whoever hasn't seen it, to go see the exhibition. And then, you know, then we know who's behind some of the voices as well.
Well, madam, there are either people who have watched Downton Abbey and they'll love it, or there are people who will one day have flu. So they should go and see the exhibition too to get ready.
Okay. Well, I think I'm not going to be able to go, but it looks like we have a football team, women's tackle football team, that's coming over there at the end of this month to play a team in, is it Birmingham? Is that the,
yes,
is it the city? Yes, there's a women's tackle football team there. So our team here in New York City is going there to this and
right,
playing with them. And I guess there's going to be a team from Helsinki and one other place. But just in case it interests you to want to see.
I had never before this moment thought of going to watch such a game. But I'm going to now, and you've enthused me with your interest, and I must find out about this game. It sounds terrifying.
Well, it won't be terrifying, but I guess you'll kind of be surprised to see women playing tackle football, maybe.
Well, I wish them all well. And I think another great thing that social change has seen is that there is now nothing that a woman cannot do that in the time of Downton Abbey, the world and society thought they never would.
Yes. That's why I think it's also important to have seen the series, because you get a sense, you know, of a big history in one series, and not just, you know, not just what they were experiencing, but like an outside as well of what was going outside of the home at the time. So I appreciate your calling in, and I'm gonna email you if I have any questions.
Thank you, madam. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Same here. I have an absolutely wonderful, I guess, going to be evening for you now, right?
Certainly, yes.
Okay. Thanks again for calling in. And Alistair, I'm going to look for you on the TV now.
Thank you, madam.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Yes, that was Alistair Bruce, and I'm going to also suggest that everybody go see Downton Abbey exhibit if you're in New York, because we don't know where it's going next. So I'm going to end the show right now. So everybody have a great day, evening, or whatever you're going to be experiencing when you listen to the broadcast.